So I'm going to talk today about low maintenance ground covers for Pacific Northwest municipalities. I mainly work with Oregon schools, but the idea is this can translate to other municipalities in the area. First, I'm going to go over a little background on these public schools I'm working with. Then I'm going to go through my materials, methods, results, and then conclusion. So generally, as you guys might know more than me, as the perception goes, Oregonians are pretty environmentally friendly, and they can be very vocal on their views against pesticides, as seen in this picture. They don't like them, especially when they're applied on their kids' school grounds, and this pressure has led the state of Oregon to implement integrated pest management programs throughout their K-12 schools. And part of this law requires the schools to abide by a low-impact pesticides list to prove that they're not applying dangerous pesticides around the kids. And it should be noted that this pressure was to eliminate pesticides completely, so it's kind of meeting in the middle. Another safety concern is the landscapes themselves in schools. The maintenance crews have a lot to do, so taking care of some of the landscape beds gets out of hand, overgrown, and it provides an area for criminals, felons to hide behind to do whatever they want to do. Well, to eliminate this, it needs to be pruned back, and again, that's more maintenance for these crews, which is tough. So an alternative or trend we're seeing is to switch to more low-growing plants, eliminate these shrubby bushes, and plant something like more like this. So that's kind of where my project was born, is these landscape managers for these schools want to plant low-growing plants. And they also, as we will see soon, they can really only mow, so they want to mow these landscapes as well. It's kind of interesting. So in Portland, our most extreme case here, we've got 5 employees maintaining 324 hectares of turf, and landscape in general, but most of it's turf. So by the time they finish mowing all this, it's a month later, and they have to restart the process. So it's only getting mowed once a month, and that's all they do. So that got me curious, how much is this really costing these schools to maintain their grounds? So I calculated some projected maintenance costs based on the sizes of the property as well as annual maintenance costs we've surveyed throughout Oregon. And we see Oregon's total about $57 million, and if we were to translate that to United States costs, that'd be about $47 billion if all the U.S. was Oregon. So just a quick summary of the problems I'm seeing. A lot of child safety concerns, that's kind of the number one aspect. And maintenance-wise, just large areas to maintain with very small budgets. They're getting their budget cut before the teachers are. And a small workforce to do all that work. And a quick representation with this pest diagram of what's really going on in the schools. They've got all this turf grass under low input maintenance, barely any fertilizer, low mowing, increases weed populations, and it's leading to poor aesthetics. So the proposed alternative, again, by these employees, is to maybe throw in some ground covers under the same low input levels, because that's never going to increase unless if the budget increases, and hopefully reduce weeds and lead to acceptable aesthetics. So the objective of my project is to identify ground covers that can compete with weeds under minimal maintenance while maintaining density and aesthetics. And these are my plots over at campus at Oregon State in Corvallis, being rated by some grounds crew managers. My project is a 2x10x4 random complete block design with 4-layer applications, and the factors are mowing, plant species, and month. And the study period began May 1st of 2015. We'll go through 2017. So the plant selection process involved OSU horticulture faculty, industry professionals, and grants maintenance crews themselves, the school employees, and it was finally decided by the school employees to select those final 10 plants, and that was voted at a IPM meeting, which we usually hold throughout the summers. So here are the 10 plants. The first 3 are the turf grasses that they chose: colonial bentgrass, chewing fescue, and creeping red fescue. And the other 7 remaining ones were the ground covers, which I'll show in picture format. It also includes the price per square meter of installation. So in this $11 range per square meter, we have Caucasian stonecrop, creeping juniper, green carpet, and it's 8 to 4-ish range, point-raised ceanothus, bearberry cotoneaster, winter creeper, and dwarf periwinkle. And just to show the price per square meter of, say, a turf, it's in the 10-cent range. So you can see it's fairly cheap to plant turf in a large scale, not as sensible to plant large scale ground covers. Other factor is mowing. It's either mowed at 10 centimeters or not. And when I mow it, I do remove the clippings to prevent some of this turf grass from spreading into other plots. The other factor is month, May and September of 2015. This represents the planning of when I installed it throughout that summer when I irrigated it through establishment. And we just picked the same months the next year, but without irrigation when it shut off. And we did explore repeated measures for this model. A little more on establishment. Planted it middle of May at recommended spacing. It got 2.5 centimeters per week, roughly, in irrigation, and we've got an initial fertilization of 50 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. A little more on the maintenance. That second year, we shut off the irrigation, like I just mentioned. Annually, it gets one fertilizer a year, and we weed it every May just to go with the planting in May. Next year, we weed it, reset the populations down back to the desired plant. And this little climate data for Corvallis here shows that really hot, dry summer represented by the precipitation bars and the temperature lines there in the highs and lows. We're capturing that really hot summer with data on either end to show how it's doing through that stressful period. Other response variables, I take annual weed mass. When I weed it, I collect that dry matter, bag it, so I have a truck full of bags after that. Monthly data, I take percent cover for weed, soil, and plant, the desired plant, as well as quality ratings, water content, and photosynthetically active radiation, and analyze it through SAS. This is how I get my percent coverage. Take my little transect, every little intersection I look above it, is it a plant, is it a weed, or is it soil? Tally all that up, get my percent. So here's my ANOVA table. It is the effects of plant month and mowing on percent plant cover and weed cover. The interactions on the left here, plant month and plant times month, showed strong significance at 0.001, and anything involving mow did not have any significance. And first I'll explore the interactions with the plant percent cover. Here's a table of my mean plant coverage data. On the x-axis, all the species of turf. The y-axis, our percent coverage in 0 to 100%. And each of these bars represents the different months, the columns, that is. So the blue bars, May 2015, orange, September 2015, May 2016 is the gray, and yellow, September 2016. And error bars denote LSD values at 0.05. First, we'll go through real quick the right half I have segmented there, the lower performing, and then we'll look more at the top performing groups. So the lowest group, about 20% and below plant coverage, green carpet, winter creeper, bearberry, just not doing so great in the low maintenance environments. Next step goes roughly to 55 area, strong red fescue, dwarf periwinkle, creeping juniper, and point rays. And the better performing of the 10, the bent grass, chewing fescue, and stone crop, which I'll go into more detail and blow that up. So same graph format as before, just zoomed in. Looking at bent grass and all the grasses for the matter, starts at 0%. Since when I took data, they're still germinating, haven't quite come up yet. But grasses tend to jump up really quick, obviously. They seed fairly fast. By September, they filled out. Bent grass is up to 100. And through that winter going into May, decreases slightly and decreases really far once you don't irrigate it for an entire summer, as you would expect. Strong red fescue follows the same trend, but much more diminished. And we see that very big drop going into the summer without irrigation. And that's where it kind of drops it into the lower group of performing plants. Chewing fescue is another good performing grass. But instead of declining throughout that summer to winter of September 2015 to May 2015, jumping from the orange to gray there, it actually grows instead of declines. But like all their plants without water, they're going to decline in that September 2016 area. And stone crop, It's not a turf, so when I establish it or plant it, it's already there. Thank you. So it's going to drop throughout, or surprisingly it dropped into that first irrigated summer, because we would have thought it would expand. But then May of 2016 recuperates and then drops back down like the others after no irrigation. For the effects on percent weed cover, instead of showing the same mean table, I'm just going to show the relationship it had with turf or with the plant percent coverage. This is 2016, no irrigation. The trend is roughly representing the line, but what I want to show is a 60% to 100% range. When the turf or plant ground cover covers that much of the soil, there's not much room for a weed to establish itself. Rather, 60% and below, you're leaving more soil vacated just to fill in with the plant or a weed. Chances are it's going to be a weed if it's just bare soil. The closer you get to zero, though, there's way more variability. The weeds could do really good, or it's not going to do very well. It kind of depends on which species of weeds are in that area. So I've concluded, out of the 10 grasses I've studied, colonial bentgrass, chewing fescue, and Caucasian stonecrop are some of the best performers. You can even see in these pictures, though, they're not your golf course rough or anything, but for only getting one fertilization a year, not getting irrigation throughout a summer, they haven't done too bad for what I would have expected. This final table shows the mean cover in that summer without irrigation. As that's all that really matters to these school grounds, they're not going to want to irrigate, so they want to know how is it going to do at its worst. So here's the species with their associated plant cover, and there's also their associated dollars per square meter. Like I mentioned earlier in the slides, it's more sensible to plant a turf in a large-scale area than it is an $11 per square meter ground cover. Well, these school grounds have a lot of small areas around their parking lots, which are usually turf and hard to get to, like mowing around signs and other weird sidewalk kind of configurations. You'd be surprised what landscape designers have come up with in the past. But that's more of our application for the stone crop in that situation. But other than that, they aren't going to want to plant something that won't take off, and they don't want to pay for that much of low coverage. And with that, thank USDA NEPA and OSU IPPC for a lot of help on this project. Thanks.
Plenty of time for questions.
Yes.
Are there any nitrogen fixing points that you might use in your research that would eliminate the need for fertility, supplemental fertility?
So the question is using plants that are nitrogen fixing. That is a very good question, and I would consider that in the future, like maybe a clover that's controllable. What I've found is when I leave this stuff just low maintenance, nothing really is done to it. I didn't even have to plant the clover, it just took off. Like, that is my main kind of weed of the weed I'm battling, basically. It takes over. So yes, it would be nice, but I would just be afraid of, like, if I did clover, that it would just spread like crazy. But yeah, other nitrogen fixing plants would be a good idea to study in the future. Yes, Leah?
Why no harder sheep fescue? Because they're very low maintenance.
Question is, why no harder sheep fescue? Well, we did have a bunch of turf grasses like the hard sheep fescue in not sheep fescue, but just hard fescue in the initial plant list, but they voted on them, so plants I may have liked or would have thought would do well in the study, they just kind of, well, that looks pretty, I want to pick that one, so it wasn't ultimately up to me for what was decided.
Did you put any wear on them at all? Parking strips and stuff?
The question is, did I put any wear on them? Myself, maybe when I took data, but no no scientific, but there was also right by Sackett Hall and a dorm at Oregon State, so I'm sure it got its own student traffic. It also gets trucks ran over it every once in a while. But any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Cool. Thank you.